You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast by the Ecological Society of America, where we interview scientists involved with policy. Today, I'm interviewing Sarah Kubing with the University of Tennessee, one of this year's three Graduate Student Policy Award winners. Much of your research focuses on invasive plant species. Could you talk a little bit about your research?
So I study invasive plant species and the impacts that they have on native communities and ecosystems. And I come from this from an angle where I spent a couple years working with nonprofit conservation organizations who were doing on-the-ground management and prioritization for invasive plant control. And so a lot of the questions I ask and the things I think about deal with how can we ask questions and do more research that can then translate to be more applied for on-the-ground managers to use. And I guess this specifically goes towards the federal government has an executive order that all federal agencies need to be dealing with all invasive species, not just particularly plant species. So I really try to focus my research on questions that can help us better understand the impacts when these species do enter our native communities and how our management might be able to better target and better prioritize for species.
You're involved with the Tennessee Exotic Pest Plant Council, correct?
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about the type of things you're doing with that organization?
Yeah, so the Tennessee Exotic Pest Plant Council, also called TEN-EPSI, is a statewide group that has sister organizations across most of the Southeast and is a subset of the Southeastern Exotic Pest Plant Council, or Southeastern EPSI. And our mission in TEN-EPSI is to build collaborations with people across the state of Tennessee for dealing with invasive plant species, and then also providing management recommendations on how to best deal with invasive plant species. And so the group provides a lot of different services. We attend lots of events, like this weekend right now. There is a wildflower pilgrimage in Great Smoky Mountain National Park in East Tennessee, and we've set up a big display on invasive plant species with lots of information for how to control and identify invasive plant species. And we've also been working most recently with the Tennessee Department of Environmental Conservation. They have a whole suite of management recommendations and plans, including revegetation plans for when a road has been developed through a state area, or for some reason vegetation has been removed and that area needs to be revegetated. We've helped assist them to pull out species that are invasive that used to be in the plan, recommended for planting in these revegetation, and replace them with non-invasive alternatives that could be locally sourced or are at least economically viable for planting. And so the group really just tries to target specific needs in Tennessee on invasive plant issues and then provide information and promote responsible stewardship through decreasing use of invasive plant species.
What are some of the species you're focused on through your work with the Tennessee Exotic Pest Plant Council?
So TEN-EPSI, and this is lots of states and the federal government, have rating systems similar to TEN-EPSI's of how they rate invasive plant species, because invasive plants range in their distribution and where they're found and how abundant they are. And so TEN-EPSI has four different ranks of invasive species, which the most severe would be severe threat species. And those are species that are really widespread around the state. Some of them, like bush honeysuckle or Chinese privet, they're both woody shrub species that you find in woodlands all across Tennessee. And they've been linked through research with decreased plant diversity. And bush honeysuckle, a lot more research has been done on bush honeysuckle, looking at how it decreases pollination rates for native herbaceous plants and forest understories. Things like kudzu, which is sort of the poster child for invasive species, is a threat species that you see all around the state. And so some of these species are ones that I'm focusing on, like the privet and honeysuckle, in my own research, specifically looking at when a woodland is infested with both those species, what does that mean for the woodland as opposed to a woodland that's just infested with just privet or just honeysuckle? Because generally we see invasive plants co-occurring pretty often, and so that's what I focus on. But so severe threat and significant threat species are the species that are already pretty abundant and widespread around the state of Tennessee. And so they are, I guess we could say, they're species that are already out on the landscape and managers are having to deal with. Some of the lesser threat, and then especially the alert species that TENEPSI lists, these are species that are found in nearby states and that are potentially expanding their range into Tennessee. So in some ways, these are the species that we really want to educate people about, because they're the ones that might be likely to spread and cause more harm, and that means we have a greater chance of hopefully catching populations as they pop up in Tennessee before they spread throughout the state. And so one species that's like that is cogon grass, which is found in further south from Tennessee, Georgia and Alabama, and it's a huge, huge problematic species that costs lots of money, and it invades both agricultural fields, so there's agricultural costs associated with it, but it also invades into wildland areas where it decreases diversity. And so species like that, we really try to keep on target and do early detection campaigns where we try to train as many people as possible how to identify these species. So when they do enter the state, we hopefully can jump on that infestation and manage it better.
During your meetings on Capitol Hill, did you find you were effectively able to convey the importance of federally funded research to the congressional staff you met with?
Yeah, so when I visited D.C., I got to meet with representatives from my own home state of Tennessee, as well as representatives in Kentucky and Missouri. And I generally felt that the representatives were very engaged, and their staff were very engaged in talking with me and my colleagues about the importance of science funding, and were generally eager to agree that science funding is important. And even some of sort of the stalwarts of budgetary conservatism seemed responsive to our request and understanding the importance of science funding. It was a little bit difficult just because we're in such a tight budgetary time right now and in economic time that I know some of the staffers and representatives are more focused on decreasing the budget than funding science education. But I think in times like these, it's the most important for scientists to be talking with their representatives to remind them that while budgets might be tight, that it's not affordable in the long run to cut science funding.
Were there particular aspects of what you said or points you made during your meetings that seemed to resonate particularly well with policymakers?
Yeah, I think congressional staffers like to hear about research going on in their own states. So even though it's federally funded, projects that were here in Tennessee, I think, perked people up and perked staffers and legislative members up a little bit more. Tennessee has a solar group called TenScore that is working to improve the efficiency of solar batteries and cells for storing solar energy. And in general, East Tennessee, I think, is really making progress as being a leader in some of these green and renewable technologies. And so I think hearing from scientists, the legislators and the staffers hearing from scientists about the importance of federally funded work, but that's happening in Tennessee and creating business and economies in Tennessee, is something that they could directly relate to and see how federal funding for science can not only benefit the country, but their own home state as well and their constituents there. So I think that resonated particularly well with them.
What advice would you give other young scientists seeking to engage in public policy?
I think that people, not just scientists, but everyone can engage in public policy in multiple ways, and I would encourage them to do it often and as often as they feel that is necessary. People underestimate the power that they have to be engaged in policy just by acting as constituents, letting their representative know what their feelings are, and I think more importantly, why they have those feelings and the rationales for why they support or don't support certain measures. And at the end of the day, our representatives are there representing us, and so it's our job to let them know how we want to be represented. And so you don't necessarily have to travel to Washington, D.C. to let folks know. We have phone and email and lots of other ways to communicate with them. I think it's really important, too, as a researcher, to think about how public policy both affects my research, but also how my research can affect public policy, thinking about what you're doing and how that could potentially influence something going on in Washington, D.C., or some policy. Just recently here in Knoxville, we had a big mulch fire with a company that collects yard waste, so wood and leaf waste, right in the city. And somewhat frequently, they spontaneously combust the larger the mulch pile. And so we had a 30-foot mulch pile here in Knoxville burn and smolder for 4 days, which resulted in two red air alert days and actually a lot of ash and carbon in local streams, and we had a big fish kill from this. And so just thinking about that, just here in Knoxville has city ordinances about water pollution, and so there was an instance right here at home where I was able to contact people who work for clean water and clean air groups here in the city and see what kind of work was going on and how the city was going to prevent environmental issues like this from happening in the future. So policy is at all levels, and it's all important.
And that was Sarah Cubing with the University of Tennessee. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time on The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.